Welcome to Hot Yoga Radio. It's a rather windy day in November. Taking a stroll. I have some family duties to attend to, and on my way. I'm in this quiet canal towpath. I'm going to attempt to clarify my thoughts on a question that Anna asked me earlier on in the week. The question was about compliments. Anna had remarked how she found it quite strange how there was a social custom of exchanging compliments, particularly amongst women, about their skin and their hair and so forth. And she'd initiated a discussion on one of the social media around just the whole notion of compliment. And we got to talking about this. And found that we really had to discuss the matter under a much broader rubric. In fact, we needed to attend to the whole matter of human interactions. My first reaction on hearing Anna's report of the conversation was to pick up and abuse Burns' language and just talk about a stroke economy. And the main idea here is how people stroke each other, give each other confirmation. Your hair looks nice, etc. on the most superficial level. And how the stroke economy gave rise to a certain belongingness with groups. Groups could kind of define themselves and maintain themselves by the individuals within the group stroking each other, exchanging compliments, rather like an economy. And this seemed to sum up some of the research, or some of the ideas floating around. One in particular is that by exchanging compliments we do something rather similar to agreeing with somebody. Because when you agree with somebody, you're issuing a compliment. And one of the commentators has said the actual content of these agreements isn't particularly relevant. But what is relevant, that there is a shared badge of belonging, badge of identity. And I think as far as it goes, there's something in that. Having said that, I don't think it goes far enough on its own. And one of the things which is missing is the observation that many human interactions between individuals are coloured by a power dynamic. One side of the bargain has more power than the other. Usually, more power in the situation. The power might be completely a matter of symbolism and fetish. It may result purely from differences in status. But as long as both parties adhere to the symbolic understanding, then a power dynamic operates. I mean, sometimes, obviously, the most extreme power dynamics between a jailer and a prisoner, or between a master and a slave, or between a patriarch and a subjected woman. Sometimes between a guru and a disciple. But there is an enforcement of the power dynamic by a potential for violence. It's certainly true in the master-slave relationship, where the master is the owner of the slave and the slave is an item of property. Gives the master the legal right and the wherewithal to kill the slave, or sell the slave, or torture the slave, punish the slave, and so on. But power dynamics play out in all kinds of human relationships. It's very difficult to find a dyad where two individuals interact, where there isn't some power differential that's colouring, to some extent, the proceedings. Now, as Hegel pointed out in the Phenomenology of Spirit, when you have a master-slave relationship, or when you have a power differential operating in a meeting between two individuals, that there is, putting it crudely, a kind of distortion takes place. Now, on Hegel's view, both parties are seeking the recognition of the other, the actual true recognition of themselves as they are. And it does seem to be a very primordial thing that humans do. It's part of our primate behaviour, perhaps. I don't know. I don't like to get too biological about these matters, even though it's difficult not to. And there does seem to be a need for affirmation and confirmation from another, but for recognition, for true recognition. And as Hegel points out, a slave will give the recognition to the master that the master attempts to elicit, simply to survive, even. You know, the master can't really expect the truth from the slave, given the slave's subjected position. Though he can expect and extract a really good facsimile of a truthful interaction from the slave, which kind of distorts the whole thing. And of course, vice versa, you know, the slave cannot really particularly demand the recognition of the master, of his full humanity and his full personhood and his full being as a human, with all its complexity and with all its particularity. Simply because the master, he is the master in the situation. He doesn't have to give it. Why should he give it? Why should he make the effort to give it? And why on earth would he expect that the slave would expose himself so that he could realistically give it? So you can see, in a master-slave relationship, the recognition that people desire isn't forthcoming, but only facsimiles of it. There's a distortion, there's a violence. We might at this point want to wonder about this appetite for recognition, about this appetite to be known and seen and loved, perhaps, by the other. A way of getting a bit of purchase on this is to take a look at the character of the basic ego, the basic sense of being a separate being with an identity, with a name, with a career, with a past, with a family belonging, with a tribal belonging, or whatever. But, you know, a definite separate identity. That's what we call ego. Now, if you meditate, if you engage in psychoanalysis or any of the modalities that derive from it, will draw on a similar theoretical model, you'll find, and if you meditate in a certain way, you'll find that the ego actually is intrinsically insecure. Its boundary has to be maintained by work, by effort, And in fact, its boundary is defined in many respects by the reflections you get back off others. Others tell you who you are, starting with your mother and your father in the typical family situation. You're told who you are. And this modality of being extends into adult life, that we maintain our egos by getting good reflections off us, by being confirmed in our idea of ourselves. And we will actively manipulate situations to elicit that idea from others, so we can be who we think we are. And it's a pretty fraught process, because generally you're not going to get the reflection exactly how you want it, unless you're very, very good at manipulating. Secondly, this maintenance of ego boundary is an ongoing process. It always needs maintaining. And there is a sense, you know, if you meditate, that you find, in the words of the Vigyan Bhairavatantra, that the little self disappears. Certain meditations, it just disappears. And you have a sense that it's a flimsy thing anyway. It's more illusory than real. The boundary is an illusion that's maintained by work, by this work of gaining reflections, of having the identity that you've decided is yours confirmed by others. This is what we imagine will consolidate it. Of course it doesn't. And in the end, death takes it. Anyway. And if you're lucky, it evaporates long, long before that. What it is seen through, can I put it like that? It is seen through long before then. So there's a sense in which this project of establishing one's identity and consolidating one's identity by gaining compliments, strokes, agreements, by perhaps making the process easy by taking an off-the-peg tribal identity, which is what the commentator I mentioned earlier was talking about, whereby we all agree that Popery is a man and not a horse, and that we will rally behind that banner, and that is who we are. Even if we don't fully understand the content of what it is we're agreeing about, the agreement becomes a badge, because it is a social identity, which automates a lot of the work in maintaining the ego. If you belong to a tribe, if you follow a football team, a lot of this work is done for it. Of course, in the modern world, where the individual is sovereign, ostensibly, and that this notion is sold as a political good, and as the basis for a modern society, that we find the ego game of maintaining and consolidating and reaffirming a boundary around one's separate identity is a much more fraught process, because we now are less happy about tribal belonging, and we've attempted to celebrate the individual and the individual unique individual ego rather than a tribal ego. So the problems created by the modern situation, that does exacerbate old problems, I suppose. So, the way I've painted it, this mutual interaction is a hall of mirrors and a tissue of flimsy illusions and a game of manipulation. And really, mostly because of the presence in these interactions of a power dynamic of some sort, or a status imbalance, or some kind of a differential that becomes a kind of a distortion. So you might say, is there an alternative to this shitty way of interacting with each other? I kind of think that there is. And I think that one should encounter others contemplatively. That means with openness to what is, with the sensitivity to what is presented to us in the field of our awareness. Without manipulation, with a conscious intent to desist from manipulating the other to give us strokes or whatever it is that we want. And we resist exploiting the other. And money. And we put the power dynamic in the bin, if there be such. Then something very beautiful can happen. And astonishingly liberating, that we see in the face of the other, the essence, as Rumi put it, the essence of ultimate truth. Now that's a bit flowery, but you can, on encountering another contemplatively, hit a tremendous intensity of beauty and contemplative insight. And this in no way uses the other as an instrument. The other isn't a means to your samadhi at all. The other is an end in his or herself. They are themselves. But if one persists on interacting with others in a non-contemplative, competitive, manipulative way, which is the usual way that's engaged with various stroke economies and ego confirmations and tribal belongings, your sensitivity as an organism, as a consciousness, is reduced just by the noise of all that, the noise of the manipulation, the clamour of the hunger for affirmation, and so on. So what I'm saying is, you want to experience something great, maybe try this.
Yeah.
With your lover in the first instance, because they'll be tolerant. Just be, and just be with the other in a very simple way. Drop in all those daft games, those socially conditioned games, those socially sanctioned games. And you'll experience something wonderful and liberating. As Rumi said, if you want illumination, look upon the human face. See clearly, within laughter, the essence of ultimate truth. Not that I believe in ultimate truth, of course. Truth is never ultimate, but never mind. The man was a poet and we know what he means. It's cool. Over and out, my little darlings.